Happy Halloween and welcome to the Hey Boomer Show, which goes live every Monday on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube, and then is also available on every podcast app as of the next day. My name is Wendy Green, and I am your host for Hey Boomer. And Hey Boomer is for those of us who believe that we are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. I am on a mission to support and inspire adults in the second act of life. And together we are learning and sharing stories and facing new beginnings and confronting endings and transitions. I believe we are evolving, not retiring. We are defining what this next stage of our lives will look like. I had the privilege this week to attend a AAUW, which is American Association of University Women Leadership Conference. And it was inspiring to be collaborating with women who are advocating for women and girls in education, in the workplace, and in society. We also had the privilege of meeting some young women from Malden High School here in Greenville, South Carolina, who started a club called the Young Women's Forum. And they started this club to have a place where women in the high school could feel safe to talk about things that were troubling them or that they wanted to get involved in. And these young women were so inspiring, and they are our future. And I am looking forward to having them as guests one day, because collaborating intergenerationally is also a big part of what we can do in this next act of our lives. I wanted to start this episode with a couple of quotes. The first one is from E.E. Cummings, and he said, "It takes courage to grow up and become who you really are." And then Maya Angelou, one of my favorites, she said, "My mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive, and to do so with passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style." And my guests today exemplify these quotes. They are thriving with passion, compassion, humor, and style. They faced some daunting challenges in producing a play off Broadway at the SHE New York City 2022 Summer Arts Festival, and I'm looking forward to sharing their stories with you. So let me introduce you and bring them on. They're both Margaret, so we're going to refer to them as Margaret C. and Margaret O. So Margaret C., which is Margaret Caterasano, serves as Furman's costume designer and costume shop supervisor. She was hired as Furman's costume designer in 1986. Then she took a seven-year break from the university in order to raise a family. And since then, she has designed thousands of costumes for the university's theater productions and teaches a number of theater courses ranging from introduction to theater to costume crafts. Margaret C. received her Master of Fine Arts from the University of Alabama, and she is our playwright. Margaret Oakes, has been at Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina since 1996. Teaching early modern literature and humanities courses. Her research interests currently focus on Shakespeare, John Donne, Elizabeth I, detective fiction, and children's fantasy literature. She is the faculty advisor for Sigma Tau Delta, and she sometimes coaches for the mock trial program. She recently published a book on the presentation of gender in Shakespearean productions of the 21st century. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Wendy.
So glad to have you. So I want to start with Margaret C., as she is the reason that we're all here today, really, in a lot of ways. And she wrote a play that then was accepted as an award winner to be produced in an off-Broadway theater. So I'm curious, Margaret, what inspired you to write a play in the first place? You've never written a play before, right?
Well, this is actually the second play I wrote, but I started writing plays during the pandemic. And it kind of grew out of a New Year's resolution I made to myself that I was going to actually write little notes to my children. I bought books, blank books, and wanted to fill them up with notes to my children. And it just was such a rewarding experience, just spending time writing a little to my children. And often these entries would take the form of dialogue or, you know, some kind of theatrical thing. And so during the pandemic, I decided I would try this out, try doing it. And so I just write a little. I would write a little dialogue like every night before I went to bed, just spend 5 minutes writing. And that's basically how I wrote this play, just 5 minutes of dialogue a night, trying to see where it would go. Mm-hmm. And before long, you wind up with a play.
So did you have an idea for a story when you started writing dialogue?
No. The prompt that I gave myself for this piece was, I wanted to start with a human being in as vulnerable a place as a human being could be, which was naked with a gun pointed at them. And then see what would happen, how I could shift the power. And that's really, truly how this play started. It grew into, as I kind of found the characters, it grew into what I felt was a piece about how these perfectly well-intentioned individuals would make terrible, immoral choices out of fear. They all have a reason to be very fearful. But how could we, as human beings, I mean, is there room ever not to judge someone when they make very, 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 very bad choices because they're afraid, because they, you know, are fearful? And that's how it headed the way it headed. And that's how it wound up the way it wound up.
So Margaret, oh, you're laughing at this. What are your thoughts as she's saying this?
Just the notion that these are well-meaning people got me laughing. I'm sure there's something in that behind all these people that's well-meaning. But, you know, I do think in the moment, people make sometimes very bad choices. And I, you know, you kind of think, what would I do in that situation? These are very, as Margaret says, very extreme situations, and you don't know, and they aren't great choices. I'm not sure if in some cases they had much of a choice, but the problem then is, once you make one choice, then that forces you down a path where you have to keep doing certain things. And, you know, and then you're sort of stuck in this, down this road you never thought you would see. And I think I would say that's probably true of all three of them, Margaret, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So can you give us a brief summary of the play, since we're, you know, nobody else has seen it. So that, or most of the people watching right. haven't seen it.
Well, I'll try to. Basically, a naked man shows up in a woman's backyard, a woman and her daughter who live in rural Alabama. And he tells them that he was robbed and all of his belongings taken from him, but doesn't want to go to the police. And, you know, as it's a sort of static play for a while, but all of these people, we find out have these terrible secrets. Although, honestly, we never find out really what Thomas is the young man.
Yeah, we don't.
All we know is that he doesn't want to go to the police. And that's the other thing about writing the play, actually. I wanted a play with a little bit of mystery, because I think there could be perfectly good reasons. And in my head, I do have a perfectly good reason for why this young man doesn't want to go to the police. But I also wanted a piece where our sympathies might switch depending on who's playing the roles and how these people are interpreting the characters. There's a lot of leeway.
There is. And I think you're right. I think you're, whether you like one character or not does switch. They're, none of them are terribly likable.
Not at face value.
Wendy, when you said you're going to open the show with a couple of quotes, I was like, oh my God, what's she going to quote from the play?
Oh no, not from the play. Some of that language is not appropriate.
No.
So Margaret C., you wrote this play, and then how did you find out about the She New York City Summer Festival?
Well, actually, my daughter Ellie, who played Sarah, went to school with a music director and they wrote a musical. She and this really talented person wrote a musical during the pandemic, because they had to complete your major project during the pandemic. And so they had to find a way to perform and stay socially distant. So they wrote a piece, and I think she just, her friend who co-wrote the musical found this festival and sent it to me, because she and her friends read my first play, which is called Zoom Play and was written for Zoom to be performed on Zoom. She sent me the link and said, you should do this. Or she sent Ellie the link and said, you should do this. And so I was like, why not? I'll do it. I'll enter.
All right. So when you were accepted, what was that like? How did you feel at that point?
Pretty great.
Yeah.
I felt pretty great. Yeah, it was great. And I'll just go ahead and say, if it's okay, this is a yearly, it's a yearly call for scripts, and they're currently accepting scripts for anyone who writes and is interested in having a play produced. You have to be a woman or a part of a marginalized population. And you have it till the 15th to go to the SheNYC website and submit your play. And they do a blind read and select based on, you know, which scripts pass.
All right. You know, so
pass around.
So you submitted it. You won. That was pretty awesome. And any playwrights out there? You have until November 15th to submit. Right. And it has to be a complete play at this point, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, at least 75%
okay.
finished.
Okay. But How did Margaret Oakes get involved in this play?
Okay, you start and then I'll pick it up.
That's good. Well, originally I had a good friend who is a really amazing, talented actress, cast, but she had some health issues and had to leave 2 weeks before we were to leave for New York. I got the call, and for a terrifying day and a half.
So that was on Monday that you talked to her, because you emailed me on Tuesday.
Yes.
Okay.
For a very, very frightening day and a half, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to write this play, produce this play, direct this play, and be in it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's pretty terrifying.
But I emailed my friend, Margaret Oakes. We had actually worked together before, a long time before. How long ago was it?
2008. Copenhagen was 2008.
And asked, will you do this? And tell them what you said to me.
Yeah. So I get this email. This is July 19th. It's Tuesday. I get this email. This is how the email starts. And this is what I love about Margaret. I wrote a play. It isn't very good. That's the opening of the email. But of course it is very good. And Margaret, tell Wendy and the listeners how many plays were submitted to the festival and how many were accepted.
They told me over 300 were submitted.
And they accepted 9.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I just want to put that out there. It is a very good play. And she emailed me. So it was in the evening. I won't talk about the snake in the pantry, but that happened that day too.
But that's my favorite part.
Okay. Yeah. So that morning there'd been a snake, a large snake in my in my kitchen pantry, kind of looking at me. And that was the whole thing. I've read this email and I thought, okay, so that's 2.5 weeks. And just by a very weird coincidence, I did not have a booked calendar, which is not typical. And I looked at my husband. This is why I'm married to my husband. I looked and I said, Margaret needs me to go to New York to be in a play. And he says, good. And he was very cute. My middle initial is J. And so he writes in the calendar, MJ on Broadway. It's very, very sweet.
MJ on Broadway.
And so I went to rehearsal the next day. And I just cannot say enough about the graciousness of Margaret and Ellie and Sam, my partners, who were so patient with me. And, you know, Margaret said there were some real changes they had to make, or they made in, because I am, for instance, a much shorter person than the original actor, for instance. Mm-hmm. So just some of the dynamic was quite different. But it was, it was just an exhilarating experience, but it was a lot for those 2.5 weeks.
You had to memorize all of your lines for an hour and a half play.
Yeah.
And when you're on the stage most of the time.
Yeah.
And I
feel like, and Margaret can correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like my character does a lot of the exposition of what people need to know. So I've got to get it right. And I've got to get it right in the right order. And I was very concerned about that, like not jump ahead and tell a story at the wrong place where it wouldn't make any sense. So, you know, getting the rhythm of it down and understanding where all the content went was really important. Like it'd be hard to fake a line.
You were amazing. We could not have done this without you.
Well,
you
were great.
Amazing.
It was great.
Wow. So
that's how it happened.
Yeah. So how did you go about memorizing all this in 2.5 weeks?
Oh, so I don't have a Fitbit, but if I did, I cannot tell you how many steps I would have taken, because I just take the script. I walk around the house and I talk out loud. My husband just got out of the way. And I just walk around the house and I talk to myself and just keep. And I did it. And then I wrote out an outline of all the action for myself. That was about a page. And then I kind of started figuring out sort of the rhythm of things and what I needed to say when. But I mean, this is what I have to do. It's like you're talking to yourself in the shower. You're talking to yourself in the car, not in the grocery store. But, you know, so I stayed. I was either at rehearsal or staying home, just talking and walking around most of the time. So. Because, like, you know, you don't want to I wanted to, since I'd taken it on, I wanted to do a good job. I didn't want to embarrass Margaret. I knew it was important. I'm working with people who are, I hadn't done a show in years and years and years, but I don't have any stage fright. I mean, if you're a college professor, you can't have stage fright.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I've said before, if we can't stand up and talk about any given subject for 50 minutes, we should be fired from our jobs. I mean, that's our job, is to just say stuff. So that isn't a problem. It was just making sure I got things out at the right time and didn't get us all confused.
Absolutely. So how many times did you hear, "Are you crazy?"
Not a lot, possibly because people know me better than that. Okay. This is something you'd entirely expect me to do. Two people asked me if I'd do it again, which I thought was a little interesting. Like, of course I'd do it again. But I just want to say one thing about this is I have a child who is in the military and is deployed far away and was going to buy a car. And I said, got this picture of this kind of car, you know, okay car. And he said, yeah, it's fine. There's another one that needs some work. And he sent me a picture of a red Jeep.
Okay.
I'm like, buddy, buy the red Jeep. You know, I know people say, you know, you should buy a car that has, a resale, think about it for resale purposes or whatever. It's like, it's yours. This is your time to enjoy whatever that is you're doing or having. Don't buy the boring, I won't say the brand, but it's a, if you buy the red Jeep, that's just my lesson here is whatever it is, and he's not going to drive this thing forever. He doesn't have small children that need to go in the back, right? There's some things that it's not going to mess up his life, but if it's not going to mess up your life and it's going to be exciting, then buy the red Jeep.
And so that's what you did. Bought the red Jeep by agreeing to do this show because it was exciting and not going to mess up your life.
right. But I think you have to set challenges for yourself like that too.
I do too.
That's important.
Yeah.
It's important.
So Margaret C. talking about challenges. I'm sure there were some trying to get this play produced, rehearse in Furman. I guess, did you rehearse at Furman?
We did.
Pandemic time. So I guess you rehearsed with masks?
No, because what happened initially was we kind of committed to the three actors and the other person who was helping me direct at the time, and myself and the stage manager committed to just hanging out with each other. Mm-hmm. And so because it's really, really, really quite a challenge, I think, to act in masks. Because how, like 3/4 of your face is hidden, and so much of acting is responding to what the other person is giving you.
Right.
So we had made that commitment to just be around each other. And so we didn't rehearse in masks, but okay. I did
some challenges.
Oh yes. Yeah. Well, let me say at the outset that Furman, the administration at Furman, the dean and the provost were so supportive.
Awesome.
And my department chair and my department, the technical director helped me find guns. They were so supportive. And the She NYC people are just amazing and supportive. Having said all of that about how amazing these people were, there were a few, and this is not a small thing, a few COVID scares that took the wind out of our, they would not took the wind out of our sails, but I was like, oh, wait, okay.
Could have.
Yeah. Yes. Because no matter how careful you are, it's just the nature of the world we live in and the nature of COVID, I think. So there was that. The flame proofing, you have no idea of how difficult dealing with the flameproofing, and I absolutely understand it. Naturally, in a place like New York City, as densely populated, you know, you've got to make sure that the theaters are notorious fire traps.
And I think a lot of people don't think about that at all when they go to a theater production, right, just how much health and safety stuff there is behind everything that's going on.
So, you know, dealing with the flameproof, rehearsing in South Carolina and dealing with flameproofing issues for set pieces in New York City was, it doesn't seem like it would be.
Long distance, yeah, I guess.
But it was. Fortunately, I had a former student who had just moved and was rooming with my daughter, who decided that he would be our props guy, and he took care of that while I was in South Carolina. And then there was the issue with the guns, because I have prop guns. The shotgun we used is purely decorative. It won't fire. And it just looks like a shotgun.
And
it's heavy, and it will do the break open thing. I wanted the break open shotgun. So, because I thought that would be a cool theatrical thing.
Yeah.
But then the prop gun that we were going to use, that the set designer, Rhett Bryson, had these in his office, and he said, "You can use these. You can use these." But because they would fire blanks, it turned out we couldn't use those. We couldn't use that. So I got airsoft guns that fire pellets, plastic pellets. But the person who runs the theater, understandably, was like, no weapon that will actually shoot anything can be used. So I had to take the airsoft gun and pour plaster down the barrel.
Which made it heavier.
That's why it was heavy.
It was heavy. Yeah. Yeah. And then isn't there some issue in taking guns into New York City?
Yes. That was the other thing. Yes. It was quite a challenge, but somehow it worked out.
And then
it worked out.
And then you said the theater was adjacent to a Catholic girls' school.
We had to go through the school a little bit to get from the dressing area downstairs. And it was literally like this.
So there was some
into the school for a minute to get on to the backstage.
Yeah. Right. So there was some concern about what was going to happen in the play because of that, right?
Right, right. Yeah. You couldn't, obviously, full frontal nudity is out.
And shooting somebody is
right out. The guns had to be locked in a case. And it's absolutely prudent that these because you don't want a child in the wrong place at the wrong time to get a gun that won't fire and wander out onto the street, and then something bad happens.
Right.
Things that you don't, you know, you think, oh, I've got that under control. And then you realize not quite, I don't quite have that under control. I have to work a little harder to have that under control. I have to tell you, and this might be in the wrong place in this program to say this, but
there's no wrong place.
When at the end of it all, when all was said and done, and then because they were so nice to us to acknowledge the hard work, they liked the script and they liked the production. I got to tell you, I feel like Superwoman. Like, you want something done? Bring it to me. I'll get it done for you. I can do it.
I love that.
If you had asked me, you know, a year ago, so what do you think? You think you could do this? I would have said, are you out of your mind?
See, like Maya Angelou's quote, you're not just surviving, mm-hmm. you're thriving.
Well, I can do anything. I'm pretty sure I can do anything.
So are you going to submit another play?
Well, I don't know. I haven't made up my mind about it yet.
What would hold you back?
I was pretty happy with Sheep Well by the time I submitted it. I do like the play, and I have ideas about writing the explanations in other plays that are related to how these people wound up where they are in Sheep Well. But I don't know that I'm to that place with other scripts yet, where it's like I'm there's all, you know, there's still like, if I can get it tweaked in time, before the 15th, although, I mean, you're right. What difference does it make? What's the worst that can happen? They say no.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. Margaret Oakes, would you do something like this again on very short notice?
Oh yeah. Here's what I knew that I could do. So we had to travel. I had three other travel plans just shortly after that as well. Like, okay, well, that's all fine. That's fine. I have to teach classes. I have to get syllabi ready. I've been teaching for 30 years on and off. I can do that. And I did, I knew I would have two or three really like very long days writing syllabi when I got back, but I knew it. So I'm like, I can do that. Right. The children aren't at home. We're going to put the dog down. There's like, what is stopping me from doing this? So I think you can't do these things foolishly, you know, but you do, it's helpful if you do have the kind of assistance that, as Margaret said, she had both in Greenville and in New York. But I also think it's how you look at it. So I would have felt very, very bad if the performances had not gone well. And I can tell you the points where they didn't, if you want me to, but two particular points where I didn't like both nights. But I think also you have to think about, what is your purpose in doing any of these things? So, this is a very, very old story. When I was living in Chicago, it's about 1986, and I was on the bus going to work. And there, I was, you know, you can't help but eavesdrop on people's conversations. There was this guy trying to impress this girl in front of me. And he was talking about mountain climbing, which in Chicago seems pretty exotic because we don't have any of those. And he was saying, you know, I climb this mountain. And there's like, and I'll be happy if I climb that mountain. And my first thought was, no, you won't. And I was actually lucky he just didn't blurt it out. But, you know, if you keep just, if the whole thing is the goal.
Right.
And I know this is, you know, in a huge scale, this is what happens with Olympic athletes, right? They win the medal. And then, you know, what do they do with their lives? This is the only way they've conceived of themselves ever as going for that one goal, right? And then you think about the fact, well, do you spend more time doing the thing or getting ready for the thing? You know, so it's not just the performance, it's the rehearsal, it's making these kinds of friendships. It's Margaret provided me the opportunity to see the child who is now far, far away, which never would have happened because he was nearby, came to the show. I know, like, if you're a musician and you really hate practicing, then why are you doing that, right? Because it's the adventure. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's the adventure, not the goal. Like, everything's just another adventure, right? And that's like every day of your life, you can make some little kind of adventure. I mean, I think I have a very sort of Winnie the Pooh outlook on things. In fact, yeah, that's what we, in my house, I'm sort of Tigger in my husband's Eeyore. It's what we say. just like what's out there? Who's out there? What are you doing? You know, who can you talk to? What makes today interesting? And you control a lot of that. And I think the choices that you make can enable you to have your adventures anywhere, you know, at home or whatever, but you have to commit to that and run the risk of something kind of going wrong. But like I said, that's not really the point.
That's not the point.
I mean, you don't run a marathon. I mean, I don't think most people run a marathon to win it. Right? So, they have other goals. I've done 2 half marathons. Finish, don't throw up. What was the other one? Don't hurt myself. Okay. Well, because I think that's how you have to look at it. It's like, what's the process? Why am I doing this? What's the process? That's the adventure.
Why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Right. You guys are poster childs for what we try to do here on Hey Boomer. So, you know, to continue to live. So what, Margaret C., what keeps you inspired and courageous going forward?
Oh, that's a great, that's a good question. I don't know that I'm courageous, but I do. Like Margaret Oakes is an inspiration. My daughter is amazing.
I was gonna say your daughter.
She's amazing. My daughter is amazing. I hope
shout
you
out
get
to the- Ellie.
I hope you get, I hope you ever someday have the pleasure to meet her.
She's, I hope so.
Talk about buying the red Jeep and saying yes to the universe. she is the kind of person that will. I was actually with her. We were in a bar, which I guess is not a great way to start a story.
It's a great way. Margaret, that's how you should start every story.
She's not 10.
Right. We were in a bar listening to a cousin play jazz. And this was while waiting. This was before one of the shows. We went to hear her cousin play jazz, and a man ran in out of the rain and sat next to her and struck up a conversation with her. And it turns out he has written for Sesame Street and teaches at NYU, and is doing currently a rock opera, Romeo and Juliet, at a theater for the New City in New York. And they just started talking, and she just said, yeah, I'll work. They started talking what they do, what they like. She plays drums, and she's like, yeah, I'll do that with you.
Wow.
And that's, to me, that's the kind of spirit that mm-hmm. Margaret Oakes demonstrated by I just sent her an email and said, would you want to be, do you want to be in a play?
See,
she's like, yeah.
Do you want to go to New York and be in a play? Is like, really? Like, someone's going to turn that down?
Well, like, you never know.
Turn that down?
Yeah. I mean, with 2 weeks to go, and yeah, yeah. That's a, I mean, both of you exhibited a lot of courage. I think Margaret C., you wrote this play, you submitted the play, you won the opportunity. Now you had to pull it all together. That was pretty courageous.
Yeah.
And then Margaret O to suddenly go, yeah, in 2 weeks. Sure. Why not? I'll learn all the lines and do the show. And that's,
I want to say something about Ellie though, too. And about seeing my child is, and I you don't have to have children to have this experience.
That's
but
true.
There's got to be somebody in your life who you want to be proud of you. And again, this is the biggest gift to me is watching that child be so proud of me mm-hmm. and going out to dinner afterwards. And when he brought a bunch of his friends and they came from the next state and they trooped down. And then we went out for dinner and he made them go around and each say their favorite line from the play. And I was like, I just could die right now of happiness. It was just, but you know, I do think that if you're going to have a goal, it should be to do things in your life that make mm-hmm. the people you care about proud of you. And for a lot of us, that's our kids. But, you know, my 91-year-old mom watched it and did not get totally terrified by all the profanity. But, you know, that's why you do things also, not just for yourself, but because you want to give things to people that you love.
Yeah,
I think that's part of it. And Ellie's just the best. But, you know, yeah, I'd do anything to have someone like Ellie be proud of me. And I think Ellie's proud of me.
But it's I think I'm blessed. Hashtag
she's
blessed.
Amazing children. Her children are the best.
Well, and I work with amazing people and I have amazing students, and I feel I feel so sad for people who don't like their jobs and are wanting of these amazing people in their lives who are just dry, live. And I know that exists, and that's hard to overcome when you're just dry. But I have an abundance of, I do have amazing children. Like Margaret Oakes has amazing children.
An abundance of family.
An amazing husband and amazing brothers and sisters and these terrific students and terrific colleagues and great friends. I'm so blessed.
Yeah.
So I have no excuse.
excuse. Well, you know, but you take advantage of it. Like you talked about the synchronicity of Ellie meeting that man that was doing the Sesame Street. You, the door opens and some people walk in and some people don't.
Right.
And you've walked in and Ellie walked in and Margaret Oakes walked in. Being a role model, that's always been what I wanted to be with my kids, you know, that they could look up to me and say, wow, look at what mom has done and look what she's doing.
And, you know, and I think the job that we're in, you know, we have people, young people looking to us that we, I don't want to say we have to prove ourselves to, but we have to be our best for them all the time and show them like what being a decent grown-up can be. So, you know, I take that very seriously. You know, I think you're mentoring people when you show up in class, alert, ready. You know, I like to dress up, but you don't have to. You know, doing your best for them and teaching them that that's the standard they should be aspiring to. So we have jobs where we are under that pressure, I guess, all the time. And I think that's a good thing for us because that keeps us on our toes. And you know, I had a conversation with Wendy before when we first met about, you know, I have no interest in being cool to them. And it's just, I am embarrassed by people who do want to be cool for the students. But they have to understand that you're comfortable as whoever you are as an adult. And so they know they will then be comfortable at one point. And it's so great to see them come back and show you what they're doing as adults. And, you know, if they once in a while say to you, you said this to me and it was important, or, you know, you taught me that and it was important, or you told me I could do this and that was important. And we don't remember those things sometimes, but man, everything you say to them is, and every way you look and everything you do is important to somebody else. And I think that does, like I said, it's good pressure on us. You know, we can't slack off.
Yeah. I wanted to give you the opportunity, Margaret Oakes, to mention your book.
Oh, thank you. I will do that quickly. So, it isn't quite published. I'm sorry to say, Wendy, it is going to be published. It has to be sent out for peer review. It is based in some productions that I saw in England a few years ago that really demonstrated some really cool ways that people are looking at gender and playing with gender, both in terms of cross casting actors and changing Shakespearean characters. And I could see a real change in the way we think about gender in our society is being reflected in the theater and reflected in how these things are reviewed critically. So I just went through a whole bunch of, I read hundreds and hundreds of theater reviews over the past 20 years to see how that language changed and how people look at these things differently. And I just want to put a shout out to an actor that I interviewed. Charlie Josephine was in a 2018 production of Romeo and Juliet at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And Charlie Josephine is getting a lot of press right now because they wrote I, Joan, which is on at the Globe right now, and it's portraying Joan of Arc as non-binary. And I mean, this is getting a lot of attention. And I just want to say how proud I am of them for that. And just how insignificant this is in I think, all theater in terms of casting people of different abilities and different colors doing different things, but also then trying to affirm that actors are actors and they can act and not just be exactly who they are. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of different ramifications for this, I think, in the theatrical world, but it's just fun. And I've got to meet a lot of interesting people and man, I've seen a lot of plays. But the pandemic was helpful, Wendy, because the National Theater and the RSC and the Globe put a lot of stuff online.
Right.
So I actually had access to a lot more material than I might have otherwise. So that was actually somewhat helpful.
Well, good luck with that, with the book.
Thank you.
And Margaret C., is there anything that you'd like to leave with our audience about moving forward into this next stage of our lives?
I'll just be restating what you've said, that just you got to be open to the universe. Yeah. You've got to be willing to say yes to the universe. That would be my advice. Say yes.
Yeah. And if you have any questions about the play or what's coming up at Furlan or anything, you can email Margaret Caterasano at margaret.caterasano@furman.edu. And if you have any questions for Margaret Oakes, you can email her at margaret.oakes.
Or if you get those wrong, we'll just send them to each other.
It's one of the Margarets at Furman.
Yeah.
Thank you, ladies. What an inspiring show. And I hope you get to produce this play somewhere else and take another opportunity to submit another play.
Yay. Thank you.
Maybe LA next time.
Thank you so much for letting us talk.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Gosh, you guys absolutely nailed it with the inspiration and why we're here, you know, to have a purpose and to live the adventure, to go for that red Jeep.
Yep,
the red Jeep.
If you're interested in hearing more about what we're doing at Hey Boomer, you can subscribe and you will get our newsletter and then a link to the Monday show. And you can do that through the website bit.bit.ly/heyboomer-subscribe. And if you have any questions for me, you can email me at wendy@heyboomer.biz. Let me quickly tell you about the delicious show we have coming up next week. My guest is named Pipka Olvilden, and Pipka is an artist, a teacher, a blogger, and a baker. She was born in Czechoslovakia and came to the U.S. with her family in the 50s. Art has been her passion, whether it's designing, painting, or baking. And we're going to talk to Pipka about her latest endeavor, which is sharing her grandmother's almond cake recipe, which I got to taste. It was amazing. And she also imports specialty baking pans from Germany, extracts, and her mantra is to bake, share, love. So I know this is going to be a delicious show. And I'd like to leave you all with the idea that we can live with passion, live with relevance, and live with courage. And you are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. My name is Wendy Green, and this has been Hey Boomer.